Access number 27272, Mr. Malcolm Frost, Reel 4. Now, you were talking about when you were guarding the ammunition dump at Burns Pass, so during your time with the 1st Battalion Middlesex Regiment in Hong Kong. Now, what happened? The officer was going to try and catch you out.
Well, the officer and the sergeant came up and were looking to see whether we were doing our job or not. And we had just changed watch, and I was on duty when they were coming up the path to the camp or to the dump. We challenged them because I could see the orderly sergeant had kept his red sash on like a fool, so I realised who he was. But we had to challenge them, and then they came and identified themselves, and immediately insisted on calling out the whole guard. Well, I know perhaps one shouldn't, but the corporals had given us the option while they kipped of changing guards ourselves, which we did, and I think both of the corporals were probably asleep. But we were turned out and we had to get into the slit trenches, which were there. And I had one fear, I think, while I was there. I always had a fear of snakes, and to jump into a pit sort of in the deep of the night didn't appeal to me at all, but we had to. And they actually discovered that the corporals were asleep. We had to actually cover for them, if you want the honest truth, to say that they had one of them had actually changed the guard and therefore had been awake, and they actually got off. And for that, I was given a superb steak sandwich when I got back to the Fanling camp. Following week, I was taken to the cookhouse and given a really good feed.
By the
NCO.
anything else happened while you? I mean, that guard duty, I presume, was just routine.
Yeah.
Nothing.
No, he did that. We had played quite a bit of soccer while I was there, and there
Tell
was some.
Tell us about that.
Well, there were some very good soccer players, semi-professionals. We played a team of Gurkhas, I remember. We had two or three quite interesting matches. I honestly can't remember who they were against, but I did play two or three times while I was there. Kept goal for the team from the whole camp. We used to go to a little dance hall in Fanling where you bought tickets to dance with the local ladies.
So tell us about that. I mean, because that's quite unusual.
We were allowed. I mean, there were Fanling Crossroads was like a little village, and there was a dance hall, and you could, as I say, you could go to the dance hall, you purchased dance tickets, and you actually could dance with the young ladies. And it was all above board, all, you know, it wasn't prostitution or anything like that. It was just genuine.
It was just dance.
Socialism, yeah. Yeah, socialising. But that was it, basically. We also used to be taking swimming.
What was the dance hall like? I mean, was there alcohol there, or was it just...
Well, there was a bit of sake, I think, or sake-type drink.
And what about the music?
It was dance band music.
Was there a dance band there?
No,
it was
records. Yeah, yeah.
And what about, how did you get on with the locals, the Hong Kong?
It was interesting because we didn't have a lot to do with them. I mean, we weren't supposed to eat any local produce, and we had to not have any ice cream other than from a company called Dairy Farm Ice Cream Company. And they used to have a regular chappy come around on a trike in the camp, and we could buy ice creams off him, and he would always give youngsters credit if they hadn't got any money. But of course he got taken for a ride, so I remember one day him asking me if I could tell him where he could find Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and Winston Churchill and one or two other squaddies who had given him their name when they had ice cream and hadn't paid for it.
And what about the local? Did you not see them at all? Or?
Very little of them. I mean, we saw... I remember seeing a local wedding. I remember seeing a chicken thief pursued by villagers. where he tossed two chickens in a sack over the fence next to our billet. But in the main, we didn't have a lot of contact with them, to be honest.
Did you like them or not like them, or did you have no?
They were fine. One in particular that we liked a lot, a girl called Mary, and believe it or not, she was incredible, because I think her husband was in the Hong Kong police force. But when we were laying this barbed wire on the hillside, I mean, it was in extremely hot conditions, and when we were doing some of the other things on the hillside, she actually used to come up with a yoke with two ice boxes, one on each end of the yoke, and she would bring ice cold drinks out to us, to sell us. But I mean, how she ever lifted the damn thing, and she would pass us on the hillside to be up there before us, to sit there ready to provide us with an ice cold drink from these two ice boxes. I mean, she was an incredible woman, to be honest.
Now, anything else happening in this? I mean, did things settle down? I mean, you said they weren't very friendly towards you, the rest of the battalion, when you got there.
Oh, did it settle in? Yeah, I mean, yeah, we did a lot. We did a lot of the duties like fire picket guards.
Now, what's a fire picket guard? Tell me.
Well, fire picket went round with a pickaxe handle and just patrolled the camp to make sure nobody set light to anything. But guards, I mean, you were put on guard at the camp entrance with guard commander, and you did a 4-hour watch, complete with a loaded rifle, and you did that sort of, that was a 24-hour thing. You had a guard, you difficult to describe. You were paraded prior to guard with your rifle, and you were inspected. And the best recruit got off, or the best, let's put it, the best soldier, who's regarded as the best soldier, he was allowed to stand down and not do the guard.
That's the stick man.
Yeah,
system.
Stick man, yeah. The rest of you did the guard, but you had an inspection prior to that, rifle inspection, and did the guard duty. But it was just basically being on guard with a rifle, same as at the bird pass. You literally just stood at the on guard with the rifle, and that was it. Just keeping your eyes open.
So you felt you got more on the fire picket than
we
guard
got more,
than your share.
We got more duties than the rest of the camp. We felt that, and certainly cookhouse duties. And I actually got,
what were the cookhouse duties?
Well, I got reprimanded for peeling the potatoes too thick. In other words, the potato peelings were too thick. Well, you're given a sack of spuds to peel, and you know that's an awful lot of potatoes to peel, and you couldn't peel them terribly carefully, but apparently somebody inspected the peelings thereafter, and we were both, two of us who were doing it that day, we were both reprimanded for not leaving enough potato and far too much on the peel.
And what are the cookhouse fatigues that you have to do?
Washing filthy, greasy, enormous pans, and they were the two duties largely were potato peeling and doing cookhouse dishes, washing up cookhouse dishes and so on.
And you got more of that as well then?
Yeah.
So, had the rest of the battalion been in Korea? I mean, was this partly that you'd not been to Korea and they
had? I just think that they'd had a fair stint, and I don't think we got duty company every other company, but certainly the time we were there, we had more than our fair share of duties, and I think everybody realised that.
Now, what about, so what happened next? So you didn't get any more welcome, if you see what I mean?
No, not really.
What happened next then?
Well, the only thing from there, we used to do a bit of swimming down at near Kai Tak Airport, but that was about it. We were allowed down into Hong Kong.
What was that like? I mean, that must have been...
Yeah, I found it interesting.
From,
yeah.
Village.
Well, I fortunately, there was a school, well, he wasn't a school chum, but he was a lad who was at grammar school time I was there, and he was a corporal medic at the BMH, British Military Hospital. And I went down and met him, and he actually showed me quite a bit of Hong Kong in the short time I was there. I mean, he took me round the sort of various sites, went on the ferry across to Victoria Peak, went down Nathan Road where all the tailors were. They would knock up a suit for you in about 2 days and so on. I mean, I saw quite a bit of it when we were allowed out. We didn't have a lot of leisure time.
You didn't but drink still, or not much?
No, no.
And what did you think of Hong Kong? I mean, was it strange and foreign to you?
Yeah, very foreign. Yeah, it was something that one just hadn't sort of envisaged it would be like. I mean, the junks and the sampans in the harbour, I mean, they were stacked in there in enormous quantity, and I mean, they lived on board and cooked on board, and I mean, it's something that you, not having seen and experienced, it was something you just didn't sort of understand, to be honest.
Did you like it?
It was a pleasant experience seeing the way other people lived.
Anything else about your time at Fanling? Not sure how long you were there.
Yeah, we were there from when we arrived in
April,
and we left there for Japan on the 7th of July. So we were there for the rest of April, May. Yeah, yeah.
Now, what was happening? Why are we going to Japan?
Why are we going to Japan? Can we have a break? So I must have a.
Now, this trip to Japan, it wasn't a trip. I mean, was the whole battalion moving there, or just...
Well, it was a draft that I was in that was moving, and it all seemed to happen very, very quickly. We had very little warning that we were actually going to be moved, so much so that inoculations we had to have. It's the first time I've ever been inoculated in both arms at the same time.
So this was the Royal Norfolk Regiment draft.
We're going to Japan, yeah. And we actually...
Now, what impact did the inoculations have?
Well, no great effect on me. One or two of the bigger chaps who always used to collapse at the sight of a needle. But as I say, it was the first time I ever received a jab in both arms at the same time, in a narrow corridor with a door each side.
Do you know what you were being vaccinated or inoculated against?
Well, I don't know if they were boosting a typhoid inoculations and cholera and those sort of things that were apparently possibly more likely to be picked up abroad.
Now, did you know where you were going as a draft?
Only that we were going to Japan, and it was only when we actually had gone on the draft we were told we were going to Kure, to the battle school at Haramura.
Right, now, what about the voyage to...
Well, we went on the Devonshire. It was only a brief voyage from Hong Kong to Korea. I mean, we left... for Japan on the 7th, and we arrived on the 12th, so it's only a 5-day trip, 12th of July.
And which port did you come into?
Kure. And we then went to the battle school at Haramura.
Now, what do you remember of the battle? Was it called anything in particular, the battle school?
It's called the First Commonwealth Division Battle School, Haramura, Kure,
Japan. Do you know how you spell Haramura? Sorry, I'm
terrible. I think it's H-A-R-A, I believe. M-U-R-A, if I remember it rightly.
It's two separate words?
Haramura. As far as I remember, it was two words. Don't be certain about that, but it was definitely Haramura.
Now,
battle school.
And what was the setup there?
Well, it was... There was a large contingent of Australians. There was the British element of the Commonwealth Division. Those are the two major elements. Then I think there was a third element, which was things like New Zealanders and other parts of the Commonwealth, Canadians and so on, but the major elements were Australians and British. The billets were absolutely enormous. I've never seen anything like them. They were the most enormous wooden billets. They had something like...
Huts?
Yeah, huts, yeah. If you stood at one end, the door at the other end looked a bit about the size of a matchbox. There must have been 50 beds, I would think, down each side. 40 perhaps. I just think the billet was housed, must have been best about 70 to 80. And it was there that we did several weeks training prior to being shipped to Korea.
Now tell me about this training, because, I mean, how much more rigorous?
Take
me through it.
It was intensive. There was a lot of fitness training still. There was a lot of forced route marching. There was a lot of assault course work. There was more in the way of tactics and training.
Now, what
training.
Sort of tactical training were you getting there?
Well, we were carrying out pseudo attacks on particular hillside positions as if you were actually attacking a Chinese position. We were taught how to dig in, how to.
No, hang on. The attacks, how realistic were they?
They were made as realistic as they could be. I mean, they threw thunder flashes at you and various things, so you were having sort of explosions around you and so on. But it was
firing overhead, though.
We did have to come under live fire at one point, but it was done when you were sort of doing crawling through barbed wire and things like that. They were firing machine guns over your head. The assault courses were absolutely horrendous to negotiate.
Tell me about them. You mentioned this before. They were much worse. What was so bad about them?
Well, they were a lot more. They were harder. The walls were higher. There was much more wire in the barbed wire entanglements you had to negotiate. The tunnels and things you had to go down. I mean, I suffer from claustrophobia, and that was one thing that never did appeal to me, to be pushed down a tunnel which is sort of partly filled with water, and as soon as the person in front blocks the light out, you're in total darkness. So I just found that
did
not
you
to
know
my liking.
Before that, you had claustrophobia. I mean, were you aware?
I had not severe claustrophobia, but I do suffer from claustrophobia.
So you knew you didn't like it
before you went there. Yeah, it was the worst part of the assault course, as far as I was concerned.
Were you allowed to help each other? Because some assault
courses, it's
part of the thing.
Oh, yeah, you got people through it, yeah. People who were struggling at the end, I mean, you helped them, and certainly helped them through it.
Was there a height confidence element to it, where they put you up high and make you walk along somewhere?
Not so much that, no. Say the major height was scaling this blasted wall. But it was quite intensive training. It was an interesting camp, very interesting camp.
You mentioned defensive stuff as well, and that's quite important would be in Korea.
Yeah.
I mean, what about the defensive?
Well, you were taught how to dig in, because...
Now, how do you dig in? I mean...
Well, you were given one of those trench shovels, and you dug in, you filled sandbags, and you dug trenches, you dug deeper trenches. We didn't manufacture any bunkers like they were in Korea, but that was really digging in to protect yourself from enemy shell fire or whatever. We didn't get put under any form of mortar or other fire, but you were just trained to establish a defensive position as quickly as you could by digging in and sandbagging up.
Anything else you were doing there?
No, that was mainly weapon training.
Well, any difference in the weapons training?
Well, a lot more live firing under sort of not just range conditions, but more sort of natural conditions.
What do you mean?
Well,
is this sort of snapshot?
Snapshots taken through. Why they took us through sort of street warfare? Because I mean, Korea wasn't anything like that, but it was that sort of snap reaction to activities that you were expected to react to and fire. We did more in the way of grenade throwing, brain gun training.
Were you specialised? No, are you a rifleman?
I got a marksman because of my shooting ability, but I actually became a signaller.
And when did that happen?
That was when I got into Korea, when I joined up in Korea.
So you hadn't had any training as a signaller before?
No.
We'll come on to that.
Yeah.
Where did you qualify as a marksman? Had that happened in England? Or?
Yeah, when I did the continuation training at Berry, yeah.
Anything else about this?
The camp?
Wonderful
experiences. It was a closed camp. It was surrounded by brothels. You were not allowed out. I didn't attempt to go out, I must admit, but certainly some of the Aussies did. I can remember an amusing experience of hearing some Aussies shouting, "Come out, you palmy bastard," and went out to find a load of Australians throwing stones at some bushes on the hillside where a RP, Regimental Police Sergeant from the Leicestershire Regiment, was in hiding trying to catch the Aussies when they left camp. It was a strange place because whether you've ever heard of the CO who was CO of the camp.
I have heard of him, but do you want to tell us?
Well, we'd heard various tales about the CO before we arrived, and I didn't believe any of them. But having been there, I believe every story I heard. He was the most, the strangest character you could ever wish to meet.
Do you know his name?
Yes, I know him extremely well. He was Lieutenant M.R. Lonsdale, DSO.
M.L. Lonsdale.
M.R. Lonsdale, DSO. MR. Yeah.
Now, come on, tell me what was strange about him.
Well, I didn't know who the CO was, but I found out the chap who went round the camp with no insignia of any kind, no beret, just shorts, bare buff, and not a handkerchief around his neck and wielding a large stick, was in fact the CO. Without using any strong language, the story I remember most about him was...
You can use strong language, right.
We were destined to go one day to one of the assault courses, and somebody decided to change it and instead give us a 5-mile bash. We'd gone out of camp by about half a mile, perhaps a bit more than that, when I suddenly heard this shouting from behind and the sound of a jeep. So we were halted, and lo and behold, who appears on the scene but the CO. He shouted at the NCOs and asked them what the hell they thought they were playing at. They should have been somewhere else. And after a slight sort of exchange, he told them to march us back to camp, which they duly did. And we were marched actually into our billet. I remember standing by my bed, and he came into the billet. This was the CO. And he started about 10 beds up from me, and he said to the first squaddy, "Who am I?" And the squaddy said, "CO, sir. Have you had your breakfast?" "Yes, sir." "Have you had your salt tablet?" "Yes, sir." "Right." Passed on to the next chap. Same question. "Who am I?" "Don't know, sir." "Have you had your breakfast?" "Yes, sir." He came down the row, and he was one away from me. And I was shaking in my shoes because I knew he was a CO, but I didn't know who the hell he was. And he said to this lad, he said, "Who am I?" And he said, "The CO, sir." And he said, "Yes, but who am I?" He said, "I don't know, sir." He turned around and he said, "Who am I, Corporal?" And I remember he snapped to attention, clicked his heels, saluted, and said, "Lieutenant Colonel M.R. Lonsdale, DSO, sir. I'm glad some fuck around here knows me. I might as well be the bloody cook for all the notice they've taken me. Now get these men out on the assault course." And we were duly promptly set off on the assault course. So I remember his name well, to be honest.
Was he a good officer?
I don't know. He put a jeep under close arrest because it wouldn't start. He would hold CO's orders anywhere where any event took place. I mean, there was no preliminaries, apparently. If he was anywhere and he thought somebody was not doing what they should or whatever, then he would hold CO's orders out in the field. But he had a reputation for being a total nutcase. And I remember queuing up one day for breakfast, and he was walking down towards the mess hall, and there was a fairly tubby chap who was, I believe, one of the cooks. And he went to speak to him, and he was swiping at his legs with this plastered great stick. And there was stood watching this chap hopping over the CO stick as he was swiping at his legs. What he was saying to him, I don't know, but that was what he was. He was just a peculiar bloke. His brother, I believe, was another Lonsdale who was involved heavily at Arnhem. Somebody said that his brother was another. Whether he was a lieutenant colonel,
was he popular or unpopular? I mean, because eccentricity on that level could be either way. Really.
I think he was unpopular in the way that he dealt with people, but popular in that he sort of treated everybody in the same way.
So he was seen as a fairly amusing character.
Yeah, we all thought he was a nutcase and treated him accordingly.
Now, what was your what they call morale like? You personally, I mean, you knew right now when you went there that you were going to Korea.
Yeah.
How did you react to the prospect of Korea?
I think there was apprehension, there was no doubt about that. Although things, had, from what we had learned, had calmed down a bit, we were still apprehensive about going, not knowing what we was going into. But nevertheless, we were all, virtually all National Servicemen. We'd all been together from continuation training, some of us together from basic training. And, you know, we were, to an extent, looking forward to it, I suppose. Although, as I say, a bit apprehensive about what we were going into.
Any final issue of extra kit or you know, different, anything new?
I honestly can't remember when we were issued with the cold, wet winter clothing. I think we got that when we were in Korea. I can't be certain, but that's one, I know what we got. I can remember the issue extremely well. But I can't remember exactly when we were given it, because it was summer when we went in, which it was August when we actually got into Korea.
Let's take me to, how did you get to Korea? I mean, you left in all, you left the Haramura camp in August 52.
Yeah, and we went, it was like almost a small fishing boat. It was a very small vessel that took us across the short trip from Japan to Korea,
and
to Busan, where we went into transit. And we people talk about the long arm of coincidence, and you might be interested in this. My brother-in-law was actually in Korea at the time. I didn't know where he was. I had no idea where he was. He was a regular staff sergeant with the Ordnance Corps. And we stayed at the Busan transit camp for several days, and I developed something one often developed in hot tropical climates. I got tinea, heat rash in the groin and under the armpits.
What they call prickly heat, is it?
It's a form of prickly heat. I mean, it's uncomfortable, really.
What's
uncomfortable.
What's it like? We'll come on.
Comes out as a rash, a prickly red rash. And I stuck this for about 3 days, I think it was 3 or 4 days, and I decided that I really needed some treatment, so I decided to go sick. And I reported sick that morning, walked into the sick bay, and there sat my brother-in-law. Now, he was in the camp some 15 or 20 miles north of Busan, and he'd never been to the transit camp before. But he, that day, the driver, duty driver in his camp had reported sick, and he had stood in and driven the his camp's sick bay people down to Busan to transit camp where they received treatment. It's the first time he'd ever been there, and I walked in to him that day.
And were you actually married then? Was he actually your brother-in-law?
He was my brother-in-law then.
So you've been married?
He was married to my sister, yeah.
Oh, sorry, yes, to your sister.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm getting confused here.
Yeah. He was my brother-in-law. And we got approval for me to go and visit him at his camp. And I went back to his camp and had a beer or two with him, and they brought me back to transit camp quite late that evening. I did just spend the best part of a day with him before we were then shipped off to join the battalion.